Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 28th of June. Thank you today for Daybreak. You're listening to Viewpoint Talk Radio. It's current affairs program with a panel of invited guests. We're discussing the issues of the day. Joined in the studio today by Alf Brewer and Roslyn Scott Gibb. Good morning to you both. And before we do anything else, we'll be having a look through the papers. If you want to get involved with today's show, then or you've got a viewpoint you want to get across, here are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Right then, looking through the issues, we're going to be looking at the... In the UK, we'll be looking at the issues of strikes, cost of living, etc. We're going to be looking at the fallout from the overturning of Roe versus Wade in the States as well, and whatever else is crossing your radar. If you want to get involved, if you've got something you want to get off your chest, as long as it's reasonably sane, we can talk about it. 952-78-4000. But first, let's have a look at the papers today to see exactly what they're saying. Perhaps give you some information, some ammunition to get involved with today's viewpoint with you, of course, live until 12 o'clock. Murder at the shops and doctors demand 30% pay rise. The main headlines today. A majority of the papers carry the attack yesterday on the shopping centre that Russia attacked on the Ukraine. Crime against humanity is the headline in the Daily Express, which says Vladimir Putin has plumbed new depths. The Sun calls the Russian president the beast from the east, whose mass murdering barbarians know no limits. The Eye says the missile strike amounted to murder at the shops and highlights the industrialized deceit of state media in Moscow, which accused Ukrainian forces of setting the shopping center on fire themselves. Financial Times focuses on NATO's pledge to put 300,000 troops on high alert in response to the crisis in Ukraine. The paper says it's a historic shift from the post-Cold War era, as the military alliance belatedly recognized Russia as the most significant and direct threat to its security. Daily Telegraph welcomes the move, but says that Western leaders need to be honest with voters and explain that none of this will come cheaply. The Guardian leads on calls from the main doctors' union for a pay rise of up to 30% over the next 5 years. It says the British Medical Association wants the government to make up for repeated real-term salary cuts to help its members deal with the effects of soaring inflation. The Daily Mail reports that doctors could go on strike within months if they don't get the increase, describing the demand as extraordinary. The Department of Health says NHS staff had a 3% pay rise last year, and we'll get another one this year. According to the Times, Boris Johnson and Chancellor Rishi Sunak are resisting calls from Conservative backbenchers to announce tax cuts when they set out their future economic strategy next month. The paper says they haven't agreed the contents of the speech, which is expected in the next 3 weeks, but any commitment to lower taxes will now probably be pushed back to the autumn budget. A source involved in the speech suggests it's more likely to focus on a long-term plan for dealing with the cost of living crisis. The Daily Mirror says the man who killed insurance clerk Helen McCork more than 30 years ago has died without ever revealing where he left the body. Ian Sims was convicted of the 22-year-old's murder on Merseyside in 1989. He'd been living in supervised accommodation following his release from prison in 2020. The victim's mother, Mary McCork, tells the paper it's so very, very sad, and Sims never divulged the burial site, and she's glad he has been wiped off the earth. And meanwhile, the Daily Star reports on a London tennis club's failed enterprise to replace ball boys and girls with dogs. The Wilson Club, which is less than 2 miles from Wimbledon, has tried to teach the pooches to fetch stray balls and return them at lightning speed. But staff found the dogs were reluctant to give the balls back, and had to be bribed with treats. The Star sums up the story with the headline, "Who's a good ball boy then?" And those for better or worse, you see, start with a laugh. Those for better or worse are your headlines for Viewpoint today. And it is Tuesday, the 28th of June. If you want to get involved with today's show, then here are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Right then, and those are right. I'm joined in the studio today. The numbers to get in touch with us by Alf Brewer and Rosalind Scott Gibb. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, panel.
Good morning.
Morning, Giles. Morning, everyone.
I've got this picture in my head now of Rafa Nadal picking up a saliva dribbling tennis ball and trying to play at Wimbledon.
Funny you should mention that, but Richard has said I'd be more worried about the saliva on the balls as well. But yeah.
Clever little doggies.
Doesn't work with cats. You know,
and I can imagine what the posts at the end of the net are going to be like after a week.
Well, I propose nothing. James, I say this story all the time, but James Hunt used to have a dog called Oscar, an Alsatian, and he used to train Oscar to collect the golf balls that he hit astray from the golf. And Oscar, in the 70s, Oscar was made an honorary member of a lower golf club on the grounds that he was often better behaved than most of the members themselves.
Yeah, well, that's probably no surprise.
Exactly. So they get right then,
and found the balls in the rough, unlike most of the members.
Indeed. Right then, we're getting some shocking pictures coming out of the Ukraine, obviously, from yesterday's attack. Shocking stuff in the commercial centre. What are we looking at? What do we want to start with today, Roslyn? Let's kick off with you today, Roslyn. What's been crossing your radar? What's your viewpoint today? 9.27.
Okay, well, I've got two or three rants.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, have to talk a little bit about abortions and stuff. But I start off with, just because I saw an interesting article by Amnesty International. I used to work a lot with them in Kenya. But this is actually comparing, you know, they're saying the Israeli apartheid against the Palestinians began 3 years after the Holocaust ended and has just gotten worse and worse and worse. And I just don't think there's enough in the papers and broadcast about what's going on. And actually, I worked in South Africa. I was the editor of the largest community paper in Durban area. And I went to have a look because everybody had the strong ideas about South Africa. And in fact, the more I learn about what was going on in the United States at the same time, it was no worse than South Africa. So what Amnesty International is saying is that they're behaving far worse than the South Africans. And certainly this whole thing about the journalist, Shireen Abu Adudri, last name I'm not sure how to pronounce,
right,
who was assassinated. And it's really been dropped by, it should have been picked up, and almost every day there's these atrocities. And well, to me, I first thing I say, I've always been very pro-Jewish, but I'm increasingly less pro-Israel.
Right.
And I continue to be very pro-Jewish. That's not the issue. But Israel is becoming worse and worse and worse. And I heard a Israeli talking about how the parliament had become 90 out of 120 members were extreme right.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can argue the case that Israel is surrounded by enemies. They are beset by energies and you know, there have been rocket attacks on several, you know, several Jewish settlements in Israel. So that's the thing. And as for
you're saying that
the assassination, that's mainly, it was premeditated. I mean, she was shot. She was reporting in an area where there had been riots, and she was shot by a security force.
Hold on. It was 6:30 in the morning. She was wearing a vest. They knew her. She's been working in the air for 20 years, and she was shot one shot in the head. She was assassinated. It was absolutely deliberate. And, of course, it was disgusting that they couldn't even take her body to have a service without almost dropping it.
There's no doubt.
It's all filmed. That it was deliberate. It wasn't an accident shot.
4,000 on the go, live to the lines. Morning, Cully, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm Kate Costamarca.
Morning to you, Kate.
I'm making this brief. I want to totally endorse everything Ros has just been saying.
Okay.
Right.
That was as brief as that this morning, Kate, yeah?
Yes.
Thanks, Kate.
I often wonder with... Part of the difficulty, and we've talked about this many times, Charles, you get big issues and you wonder why the media don't pay enough attention, or it's not on for long enough, or the angle that they come at it from is classed as, you know, the wrong angle. But I have a completely different outlook on it. It's called, this is about human beings. Most people turn a blind eye to what's happening in Israel. Or any other conflict areas, for that matter. Ukraine, you know, they weren't, you know, white as white before the war started to the Russians in the Donbass. I've said this before, you know, they were stopping them speaking Russian, they were stopping their education in Russian, there was lots of things. But what happens is the public, they don't lose interest in it, they get dismayed because there's no clear solution. And people want to say, well, I think we should do this because it will change that. And some of these, and especially the Israeli issue, that's been going for how many years now? Loads of years. I can remember I was a member.
47.
Well, I was a member of, you know, Labour for the Palestinians, Labour for the Israelis, Labour for the Jews. You know, I've been involved in all these. But there's never, you go to meetings and you listen to these people, and whilst I may have a clear view of what I think is right and wrong, how can I change that? It comes back to my old favourite, you have to be in power to change that. And if you ain't in power, you've got no chance of changing it. And people get dismayed at that. So it's not that they've lost interest, it's not that the media are making things up, it's just that they don't know how to deal with it.
Well, this was murder of a journalist.
Yes.
So they could have discussed it killing a journalist. And we're not allowed to be apathetic. I'm sorry. We're not allowed to just say, oh, well, this happens everywhere and I can't do anything to change it.
I didn't say that, Rose. You have to be clear. Yes, it happened. Yes, it was wrong. How can we change it? And that's the dismay of people in the world.
By
how
pressuring
can we
Israel
it?
to
No, that hasn't worked. It hasn't worked for 100 years, you know. It's not working. You believe me, it doesn't work. You need to get big pressure, like the United States, who have more influence over Israel than anybody, for them
to...
They don't do anything. Because the Jewish community in the US are a massive influence on US politics.
Yeah, but that's not good enough.
We're getting it live to the lines, 952-78-4000, more. Morning, Cooley, live on TRE. We've kicked the ball off early this morning. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, good morning. It's Marlene Kelsey.
Morning, Marlene.
I want to agree with the two ladies before, because I went to Israel many years ago on a kibbutz, and I loved it and fell in love with the country and everything. And I've always had a great warming towards it. But what happened to the journalist was absolute. She was assassinated, without a doubt. And and her funeral was terrible. Absolutely terrible. And the poor little girl there, she's a Christian as well. She went to the church with a Christian. And it was absolutely, it's diabolical. And what they're doing, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, is that I'm not against Jews. No, definitely not. I have friends and everything. It's not. But it's Israel, the government of Israel. These are getting very, very bad. And it's true, the Americans do send loads and loads of money to them. And whilst they do that, they feel safe. But it's a very, very difficult situation. But it's very bad what they're doing in Israel. They really are doing very, very bad things. And I am against them 100%, but not against the Jewish race.
Right.
Okay?
Thank you very much for your call in there.
Sorry, but I still come back. It's all well and good saying that, Marlene, but we all agree what happened was wrong. But how do we change it? And there is only one way to change it. And it's all right for us to say, put pressure on Israel. The only country on the planet that can put pressure on Israel is America. Mm-hmm. And the American Jewish lobby is so big that the United States are not going to take sanctions against Israel. It's not going to happen. Now, the only way you do it is by changing the control. Now, was Trump on the same line, or was Trump, you know, trying to change? Even he kept out of the Middle East argument to a certain extent. You know, he might have had one or two statements, but he kept out of it because the only solution is you sanction a country that's operating in the wrong way. And nobody on this planet, whilst the United States have got all the strings, nobody is going to give sanctions against Israel. Therefore, Israel will carry on in the way it's carried on until such time as that happens. So that's the end of the argument. I'm not saying...
Well, they have to at least publicise it. There was very little in the American media.
Well,
and that's just wrong.
Yeah,
That's just wrong. It's not good enough.
Well, that's true as well. Raising awareness about an issue. That's why, you know, some people, lots of people, like me in the past, not so much now, but we set up, you know, CND, Greenpeace, you name it, all of the Amnesty International, and we try to get them because they're the experts in their field. But effectively, all they can do is raise awareness and hope that people in a country can put pressure on their government to make their government change in a position against another government.
Okay, so that's why I'm doing my tiny little bit. The same way I pick up cigarette butts on the beach.
Yeah,
I'm not going to solve the issue, but I'm going to do my little bit.
Absolutely, and I agree with you for raising it as an issue and making people aware of what happened and
what continues to happen
absolutely.
In Israel.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. Good morning to Richard. Let's have a look. They turn a blind eye because Israel is always at war. That's one of the reasons that people turn a blind eye to it. Richard's also come on with a few bits. Spain's foreign minister says the presence. He's let me know this one. Spain's foreign minister says presence of Russia in North Africa is increasing. China is not a threat to the world. NATO, that's from Zhao. Zhao is saying that NATO is spreading false narrative and the NATO mindset is of the Cold War era. Interesting stuff coming out of China.
Is that Russians escaping from Russia, or is that Russia sending Russians to North Africa?
I presume it's Russian influence in North Africa.
Absolutely, which is bound to happen, and it's been happening for many, many years. It's just that now it's more highlighted because of what's happening in Ukraine. Yeah, the issue of getting grain out of
Ukraine. Reports are saying they've been stealing. They've been renationalizing.
That wouldn't surprise any of us, especially in the Donbass region. But you know, the biggest crop area is in the safer, if there's a safer part of the Ukraine, and it's just that they can't get it out through the seaports. So only about 10% of their grain can get out of the country by train, lorry, or whatever other method they use. So there's got to be a coming together. Now, if the African countries who rely on Ukraine grain, all they can do is put pressure on the Russians to say what you're doing is unfair. If the Russians are going into African countries and exerting their influence by offering all sorts of manner of blackmail, you know, money and oil and gas and whatever else it is, then of course Russia are going to do that, because it stops then the African countries saying you're murdering our people because they're all dying of what do you call it when you don't get any food?
Starvation.
So you know I have this mental block occasion.
Well,
it's a long word, like marmalade.
I didn't know Russia was in North Africa. I mean, China's all over Africa. It's spread like Marmite. But
what's this marmalade? Just a little something that should come up.
You don't think Syria is sort of North Africa? It might be the Middle East, but it's north of Africa, and it has loads of influences.
No.
I say North Africa, I'm talking about Morocco.
Algeria. Gaddafi never had any contacts with Russia? Not really.
Well, the thing is here, as
Lockerbie.
As we've seen through over the past couple of years, you know, China has put massive development into many of them.
Well, we use the word development with
parentheses.
With care.
Yes, parentheses.
They'd okay. help themselves.
No, but if you... Well, let's...
They've raped Africa.
They haven't raped...
They have.
500 years...
Oh, yes,
500 years of British Empire, and you're trying to tell me that Russia, China, America, and anybody else can't have a similar influence on the world. That's
We've moved on. We're supposed to be more civilised by now.
We haven't moved on. Well, yeah, where's the civilisation in
the British gave most of the African civil service. They gave a lot in Africa.
Gave what? After they'd taken all their stuff, they gave them a little bit back.
They built industry. No, they the Chinese haven't done that. They built highways in order to take out the goods and steal what they could from all the countries.
The world's
I'm talking about East Africa.
The world's two biggest dams in Africa are being built by China, but that don't count. You've got to stop rubbishing them just because you don't like them.
I don't like them. By all means, say they should. I like the Chinese. But you cannot say the Chinese.
They're unfair about trying to influence these other countries. Britain have been doing it for centuries.
This is a bad excuse. I mean, I mean, I have lived in Africa. I've been all over the place. I know my way around Africa.
9527847. Quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
TRE. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Back again, always live, always lively with me, Giles Brown, live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. If you want to get involved with the show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
If you want to get involved with this show, let's talk about strike action. Let's move away from this for the moment. If you want to get back in there, let's see what's coming in. Russia is using private mercenary Wagner groups to destabilize the Sahel region so they can deny movement involvement as a state. Yep, that should be quite good. And also, she knows her way around Africa. You mean, oh dear, Rosalind, you mean the British stole a lot. You know your way around Africa. You can give Priti Patel a tour of Rwanda then. There's a thought.
Yes.
Right then.
Don't mention Priti Patel. She's an embarrassment to womanhood.
Right then.
Ross probably knows more about Africa than Priti Patel, I would guess.
I would absolutely imagine that.
I mean, she's from Uganda, but I think she was a child when she left.
Yes, indeed.
Her parents were thrown out.
When they were forced and taken in by Britain at the time.
That's
a policy
right.
that now would not be allowed by her own government.
She'd end up in Rwanda.
Yeah.
And hope you like it for the rest of your life.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Right, we can talk about that in a minute as well. You know, but let's talk about Mick Lynch has become the darling of the media, or the darling of the left-wing sort of liberal sort of elites, if you like, because he's been sticking it to certain journalists. He had a brilliant conversation with Kay Burley from Sky News, where he completely, and she said she was flustered, and it was quite hysterical, because I've never seen, if that's flustered, I don't know what, if that's flustered for Kay Burley, I think, if somebody in a state of high excitement must be sort of raising two eyebrows, because Mick didn't look like, and then of course we had the Piers Morgan situation where he basically spent 2.5 minutes lambasting, the trade union leader for having the hood from Thunderbirds. From Thunderbirds as a profile picture on his first social media, and said this was a show of what an evil human being that Mick was. And Mick was like, Mr. Lynch was like, well, haven't we got more important things to discuss?
That's because he's got, you know, he is one of the worst. I never watch him. Piers Morgan. I never watch Piers Morgan because he's a showman. He's not. I don't think he's a proper journalist. And what he's saying, he's taken. Do people know who you're talking about in Thunderbirds? The evil man in Thunderbirds? Did anybody watch the episode when they flew the planes into the Twin Towers on Thunderbirds? You know, predicted 6 years before it actually happened. Yeah.
Well, anyway, listen. We're not going back to the... You
know, well, no, I was going back to the 70s.
Yeah.
Oh, right. The 80s.
Yeah.
So I think people like that, and Kay Burley, to be honest, you have to take it from, because they're trying to talk to these trade union people as if, one, they're just making up a story on behalf of their members. They don't know what the members really feel. And I can tell you from living proof, you cannot go to a group of workers. Workers don't go to work to go on strike. They don't go to work to make massive demands. They go to work to earn a fair day's pay for a fair day's work in order to survive and keep their families going. That's what workers go to work for. So when they present themselves, Mick Lynch. Now we have to put it into the context of Mick Lynch is the modern Arthur Scargill, because the government are definitely having a go at the railways because they can't stand what's happening. Grant Shapps is just awful. Awful, awful, awful. And to say, oh, I'm not going to get involved, is absolute arrant nonsense. This is the Transport Minister, and he should know absolutely without fail what every rail company, what National Rail, what all of the organisations inside the rail system are doing. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to break it up even more, to take even more money. This is what people like Kay Burley don't understand. If you can't see that they're trying to take more money out of the railway network system and give it to private enterprise rather than doing the infrastructure, paying the people properly, keeping the rail service running, and to be honest, to be fair, since it was privatised, services have got a bit better. But the services that haven't got better are now really awful. You know, Beeching was the last person who destroyed the British railway system when he closed down all the local lines. So Mick Lynch is now portrayed as this arch enemy of capitalism. And you go, well, of course he is, because the capitalists are taking the money away from the workers who everybody else is relying on. And forgive me, you know, I was a strike leader. I would never, ever advocate strike action as a resolution for industrial strife. Never. Because not only do you injure the company that you're taking it against, or companies in this case, you injure the workforce. They lose money. It's not like, you know, the rail companies don't come along and say, oh, we'll pay you while you're on strike. That doesn't happen. And also what you find is you'll get the rogue managers who will then pick on people individually who return to work just saying, you know, right, I'm coming back to work now, I'm going to work properly, let's get on with life. But no, there will always be armhole managers who will want to carry on poking people in the eye, abusing them, bullying them, disciplining them, all sorts of things. And then some clown at the top will say, we need to shed 2,000 people. They don't shed 2,000 people by natural wastage. They don't shed 2,000 people by offering really good redundancy terms, better than state redundancy terms, which for most people is about 1,500 quid, maybe 2,000 pounds, if they're lucky. If they're lucky. And these are people who've done 20 years service on the railways. They don't do it like that. They do it by stealth. They do it by, you were late today, have this disciplinary on you, put on your record. You spoke back to an inspector, we're going to now start a discipline. And they start disciplinary processes and they start putting pressure on people. And then, because Stephen Ritson was asking a question, you know, supposing somebody goes into work and says, well, I've turned up for work, but I'm only going to do what I want. You know, life at work isn't like that. We ran a work to rule. We had to produce a booklet for all our members to tell them what the rules were about going to work. And the first thing management did is said, well, we don't care what your rules say or our rules say. We're telling you, we want you to do this job. And if you don't do this job, we're going to send you home. And of course, as soon as one gets sent home, we don't leave everybody else in work. So that creates 20 people then on strike, because they're coming out in sympathy for that. And then because those 21 are on strike, there's another 50 come out in sympathy because they're part of the same organisation. And so it builds up. industrial action solves nothing, and Grant Shapps should be absolutely ashamed of him. Well, for more than one reason. He's the guy who was conning people out of money over what was it called, an e-book or something, and conned people out of money and it, under a different name, and then pretended that it wasn't him. You know, it's just, and he was challenged at Tory party conference about it. You know, are you this Richard somebody or other, or are you Grant Shapps? I'm Grant Shapps. Yeah, today. What right. are you going to be tomorrow?
But so, I don't think anybody should be going on strike at the moment anyway. We're just recovering from a pandemic. We've got a war in Europe. And everybody should just be working as hard as they can and be grateful they have a job.
And that's the wrong bit. They should be grateful they've got a job.
Yeah.
They should be grateful they've got a job that's paying them below the standard of living that they have to claim benefits to survive.
Well,
that is not the correct
one. They're paid double the medical nurses and teachers.
What? Paying double what?
They're paid double.
Yeah. Paid double what? What do you mean they're paid double? Nurses are one of the poorest paid groups of people.
That's what I just
in
said.
The NHS. Well, they're going to double their pay.
No, what I said is these trains that are on strike, yeah. they are already paid double.
Really?
The nurses and the teachers.
Really? So the cleaners of these trains, because you can't have a dirty train, who get £12,500 a year, get paid double what a nurse gets.
Are they striking?
Of course they are. They're the ones who are on strike. It's not the drivers. The drivers are in a different year. This is what everybody... Drivers are on about 57, 58
well,
grand
I was
a year.
Reading that...
And they're members of what's called ASLEF.
Yeah.
Right? They're a different union. And funnily enough, because the train operators know what side their bread is buttered, they've already done a deal with those people. They ain't going to go on strike because they've just been given a big pay rise compared to that. And also the second thing that they're saying is that the media, you know, I have this big hang-up about what the media say. The media keeps saying that the RMT are asking for an inflation pay rise. They're not asking for an inflation pay rise. They're asking for a pay rise at the rate that inflation was when they put in their claim, which was December. It's 7%. So it's not this 11, 12, 9. I live for all that. 14% bloody inflation, putting in pay claims for 20%. It's nonsense. So we've got to stop. You say about the media, you look at what they do, how they rubbish trade unions. Absolutely diabolical. They misrepresent, And Kay Burley, I listen to Kay Burley most mornings. I do it because I know what the opposition are saying, because she comes out with some real classics, and she didn't have a clue how to talk to Mick Lynch because she doesn't understand. So she's doing what you did. It's the drivers. They paid 57 grand a year, more than a nurse ever is and whatever that is. But these drivers now are fully responsible for the trains. But the cleaners and the rail operators and the overhead workers and the rail line, you know, they don't get that sort of money.
Well, I don't have any sympathy with anybody that goes on strike these days.
952-78-4000, always live, always live. Gary's come in with feisty, and that's all he said. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. It's Sharon Alicante.
Good morning to you, Sharon.
Good morning. These days, people don't strike unless they're desperate. And it's all very easy to say that the nurses aren't striking, the teachers aren't striking. Well, the teachers might be striking, actually. You don't lower the pay of everybody else to reach the lowest denominator, which is what Brexit is all about. It's race to the bottom. Scrap all the rules and race to the bottom. The bankers are still getting... By the way, yeah, this is the other thing. The bankers are still getting their bonuses, remember, in this climate. And you don't take money off other people. That you raise the pay of those lowest paid workers. Now, they say in this climate we can't do it. We're the fifth richest country in the world. If we can't run decent public services, then nobody else can. It's all a myth. This is the government, the Conservative government, blinding us with capitalist science that actually is not true. They trying to tell us we can't afford it, we can't afford this, can't afford that. They soon find the money when they want to, and I think we're all being hoodwinked and falling for the same old capitalist blackmail. You watch the bankers, they'll get their bonuses.
Well, this is the thing,
the Tories have just awarded the MPs £2,000 a year pay rise.
The middle managers.
It's inequality that's wrong. Anyway, I'll leave that one. That's one with you for now.
Sharon, it's middle managers in the banking system. The median pay rise for this year is 12%. They've already got it. That's nothing to do with their bonuses. And on top of that, they get all their bonuses. And that's the ones right at the very top. Who is this? Someone in HSBC or something got about £2 million bonus. And then they come back to us. No disrespect. I don't support strikes. I don't think strikes ever achieve the end object of what people go on strike for. But, as Sharon quite rightly says, when you're pushed into a hole and there's nowhere else to go, you will take the action that is necessary. Yes. 40,000 people, 40,000, not four or five, 40,000 people voted to go on strike because they've had enough. Not because they want to bring down a government, not because they want to bring down the rail. They work for the rail companies. They need the rail companies to exist. It's nonsense.
This strike is suiting the Conservative government. It's what they want. They want this division. It suits their rhetoric and it suits their platform.
And they also want to destroy another big union. They also want to destroy an industry and make it do its own way. Listen, when the miners were on strike, you know, back in the day, you know, there was the miners' strike and everything that went with that. And then, as I said, I worked for British Telecom. We were then being called by the Tory government. We were the electronic miners. They had to break the British Telecom stranglehold of the network. And they didn't. What they were trying to do was break the unions and break the system so they could sell it to America, which they did. And if anybody can tell me that, and lo and behold, what are we going to see next week? Ballot papers are going to be issued to BT workers. Ballot papers are going to be issued to postal workers. There will be a review of the teachers' pay structure because they've always reneged on the teachers' pay setup, remembering that the teachers also get government pensions that they tried to take away. And so it goes on. And it's back to the old, if you remember the days, the old state-run industries being allowed to mismanage. And they're mismanaging on behalf of the country. They're not mismanaging on behalf of British Rail. They're mismanaging on behalf of the country. They're destroying the rail network.
It's also about looking at people's pensions. They've messed about with so many people's pensions over recent years. You may not have sympathy with pay rises, but you should be having sympathy with pensions because that can affect you one day. And if they do away with final salary pensions, which they are doing, to make people poorer in old age, it's going to backfire on them. They're going to have to fork out for more benefits, which is ridiculous. So thanks a lot anyway.
The only final salary pensions that I now know about, they're either existing ones from before which were maintained because the people are in work, or in the banking industry. No other industry now has final salary pensions. They all have private pensions. Nonsense. Well done, Sharon.
Thanks for the call, Sharon. Always good to have you with us. Short break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Charles Brown, live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Listen to Viewpoint Talk Radio's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests. If you want to get in touch with today's show.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Those are the numbers to get in touch. Let's have a look at some of the comments in on social media. Let's have a look. We have... this is a good morning. Good morning.
On social media.
Okay. I was going to say that, and now I've got a caller in. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's John Harper.
Morning, John.
Morning, you girls. Right. Okay. I've only just managed to tune in, and well done, all of you. You're doing exactly what the globalists want you to do. You're arguing amongst yourselves. Globalists are trying to pull down the whole world economy at the moment because the only way they're going to achieve the Great Reset is if they make you all poor and so chaotic and so destructive that you have to accept what they offer you. And, you know, you put sanctions on Russia, which have actually strengthened Russia, made it more money. They're arguing between yourselves. They've created strikes. They're pulling you down. They're just pulling you down. I agree with everybody on there that all the points you're making are valid. But the fact is, they're valid in the fact that they're doing exactly what the plan is supposed to be. Pull down the Western economies so that when they say, oh, that's it, the economy's collapsed, your money's worth nothing, we're going to give you a digital passport, we're going to give you a stipend, a small amount of money each year, and you'll have nothing, but you will be happy. So that's what you're all doing. You're just actually stirring up all the dissent that they want to happen. And until people stop doing that and start realizing that their enemy is not each other, it's the bloody globalists, it's the elites that are running it, it's all those merchant bankers you talk about that are getting their bonuses. You're correct. They're making it, they're rubbing it in our faces, they're stirring up problems. That's what it's about.
Okay, panel, do anybody want to come on back? Come
Fox
on.
Fox News? Is this from Fox News you get all this, John?
No, it's
we're
not
invited
from
Fox. We're supposed to fight amongst ourselves. We're invited on to rant. That's what we do on Viewpoint.
Yeah, I know you rant on Viewpoint, but the fact is, you're ranting about the wrong bloody thing. You're ranting about all the things that they've given you as diversions to actually divert all the public, make them turn against each other.
Right,
and that's the wrong thing. You should be ranting against globalism.
I'm never quite certain.
Against
John,
the globalist elites, against Klaus Schwab or whatever his name is. You should be ranting against the people who are trying to actually put you into poverty and slavery.
Yes, absolutely, John. I agree with you 100%. But I'll come back to my simple point every time. How do you challenge it? How do you change it? You can only do that by getting involved in the current system and changing the system to suit your needs, which means, unfortunately, for people like you, John, it means you have to involve yourself in elections, you have to get yourself involved in political parties, you have to argue politics, and then you have to really, unfortunately, quite often, compromise in order to move things one step closer to your position. I don't believe for one moment that Boris Johnson would recognise a plan if he walked into it. I do, however,
Boris
I do,
Johnson
however,
is controlled by his masters.
Well, but who are these? Who are these visceral masters? Name.
Karl Schwab.
You know, he doesn't.
George Soros.
So how does he go to the British Parliament and say to the British Parliament, 640 odd people, you must vote this way in order to change this law in this style? How does he do that from a distance, having no involvement in it? And I'll tell you, there's a worse thing than what you're saying, John. Because the Tories are doing it by stealth now, because under the new election bill, I was going to come on to this later, under the new election bill, you have to have photo ID in order to vote. That means they're imposing photo ID on every elector in the UK. Every elector. Now,
have you got a driving license in your pocket, Al?
Yeah, I know, but I do
have
that. Hang on, John. I do that by choice. I don't have to have a passport. I don't have to have a driving licence. If I was an objectioner to it, I wouldn't have it. My mum doesn't have those things. She doesn't drive and she hasn't got a passport because she's got no requirement. She's got no photo ID. And you know what the suggestion is? The suggestion is from the Tories, well, we'll have to introduce a system where they can buy something that proves that they can vote. Buy something. Your freedom of voting and you've got to buy something to prove that you can vote. This is what the Tories... This isn't a visceral person. This is real.
I said, they're trying to bring about a world where you cannot do anything unless you've got your social contract.
John,
if you're a bad person, they'll turn you off.
Who is they?
Klaus Schwab.
Right, so I'm talking about the Tory government in the UK are doing this. They're not fictitious.
You're looking at the macro, well, the micro aspect of it. You're looking at your personal aspect.
And you're telling me, John,
aspect.
In real terms, you're telling me that 640-odd MPs are listening to this guy in the fog somewhere, telling them what to do, and they vote the way he says. Really?
They're all... It's the uni party. Haven't you realised this yet?
What's the uni party? That's Carl Spears, isn't it?
Oh, what's that? The uni party? They're on the same team. I mean, some of them aren't. Some of them are in there genuinely, but the majority of them are on the same team. They're bought and paid for.
Right.
And I've been there, and I know what I'm talking about.
No, you've been to one part of it, John. You've been to one part of it. You can't class every single MP sitting in the House of Commons. If that's true, why is Corbyn sitting on his own on the back benches, not part of any party? You know, that's not true what you're saying. You shouldn't make up these things.
Corbyn is a loose cannon as far as they're concerned, right? He's a dyed-in-the-wool Marxist, and he ain't going to get in at the moment because they know that if they present Marxism actual face on, it will be rejected. But if they bring it in by stealth, if they actually bring about a situation where you have the Chinese-Russian control system where... the other day...
He's not a Marxist.
A Chinese group of bastards went to a bank to try and get their money because the bankers were just holding their money.
Right.
And they all had their COVID passports in China, and as soon as they got to the bank, all of their passports suddenly turned red. They suddenly had COVID, and therefore, under law, they had to go home and quarantine.
It's a control system,
and you're walking straight into it. I told you two years ago, when I had a voice before I got silenced, I told you everything that's happened in the last 2 years, and Giles confirmed that the other week. I do not get my news from Fox News. I wouldn't go to Fox News or any mainstream media outlet for my news because they're all controlled by five people and I don't want to know about that. I get my news from people on the ground.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, John.
All right, so you're walking into the Great Reset.
Right, okay.
That's what the plan's about and that's what you're going to get if you carry on with this bickering between each other. And I'm not talking about you two. I'm talking about the world. People are bickering against each other. Humanity, we are one humanity, and unless we actually pull together and actually act as one humanity, and I've divided it down now. If somebody's on the side of the globalist, they're my enemy, and if somebody's on the side of sovereign individuality, then they're my ally.
Right. Okay.
And I've got allies that you would not believe that I would ever have.
John,
who are completely diverse from me. So walk into the Great Reset. You will own nothing. You won't be happy, but you will own nothing.
John, thank you.
I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much, Trickle. You did say you were going to call in. Good to hear from you as always, John. These are the numbers to get in touch with us.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Going back to thank you for John for those calls coming in. 952-78-4000. Right then, looking at some of the comments coming in, because we've got about a minute before the news. We might have to go over the thing as well. So, just quickly, Dawn came in after the interview with Piers Morgan. Mick Lynch changed his Facebook picture. Facebook picture, profile picture, to one of Mr. Morgan with Ghislaine Maxwell. Yeah, I saw that one as well. It's true, absolutely true, he did.
That's why I don't use social media.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, right, okay, let's try and quickly. This is in from Richard. So, John Harper, Charles Hu, quoting Facebook and can't even pronounce the name Priceless. He forgot to mention Bill Gates. Tell John to read Sloman, please. He might educate himself. TRE is mainstream media. Correct. I don't believe it. It's somewhat interesting to hear from John. While another one coming in, I don't always agree with John Harper. He's right about the squabbling. What a load of informed junk. Many of the facts are just plain wrong. Too many opinions being stated as fact. Oh, you're back again. Okay. I've just switched off again. Off you go. Take it with you. Take your radio. Throw it in the sea and follow it. Right. Meanwhile, they should get trained refugees to drive trains, then they would like the present pay of the strikers get. So there you go. Get the immigrants that you're not allowing into the country to drive the trains. Absolutely. What could possibly go wrong?
Listen, train drivers ain't complaining. They're not saying we've got bad pay at all. They have, not once. ASLEF have made their position quite clear. They're not supporting the RMT's position other than colleague workers.
9:52. Right then, those bongos mean we've come to the end of the first half. We'll be back with more recent debates and viewpoints after the national and international news.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Always live, always lively. Back for a second half of Let's Talk. Nice, Let's Talk. It's Viewpoint, of course, with me, Giles Brown. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. In fact, I will let Lucy give out the contact details for this morning.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Joined in the studio by Alf Brewer and Roslyn Scott Gibb. Good to have you with us. This in from Ray. Let's have a look at some of the bits and pieces for an interesting first half of Viewpoint. This is from Ray. Good morning to you. I agree that pay rises need to remain at sustainable levels to avoid rampant inflation. But then the UK government has just agreed a 50% pay rise, 5-0, for the manager of a UK airport. I think it's Manchester. His wage is now rising from about £400,000 to £600,000 per year. So once again, it can be seen as one rule for most, but another for those at the top. Looking, this is from Andy at Fuengirola. Andy Fuengirola. Your last caller, John, said, told listeners some weeks back that Russia wouldn't launch any kind of serious attack on Ukraine. Does he still hold that opinion? Meanwhile, this in from, okay. Mick, this go, okay. So this coming in from, Mick Lynch, the walking fraud. A man who voted for Brexit, advocated to RMT members as Assistant General Secretary of the RMT to vote for Brexit, citing that leaving the EU would end the tax on workers' rights and end the tax on rail workers, and stated last week that it was not a mistake to have done so. He's responsible for the demise of its members. He's acting as a catalyst. Maybe Alf could explain why one needs to get officers in 2022. After all, the tubes runs well enough without them. How has technological advances stealth? RMT members, don't hold back here, Richard. RMT members are a bunch of Luddites. Grant Shapps is a liar and an idiot. They're not getting below the minimum. Alf, 7% is a delusional request, and even if they get it, they won't, and they'll still be off, because drivers can achieve high wages because they know they can walk away to another franchise. The problems of privatising the railways. Labour's Lair could have prevented privatising the railways in 1997. They didn't. As for bankers, as bonuses, shareholders get them as does profit. Okay. Manchester Airport but Holdings, by the way, is a public company. So that's let me go through some other bits and pieces. For Alf, this is in from, I know you're sitting there from that. Train drivers to join other rail workers on strike. This is a report in from the BBC on the 9th of June. Train drivers are set to join thousands of other rail workers on strike for June and July. ASLEF, Britain's trade union for train drivers, announced strikes at three companies in rows over pay. It comes after the RMT union, which represents guards and other railway staff, said 40,000 workers from Network Rail and 13 trains firms would walk out. Thank you very much for that. Meanwhile, because there has been quite a bit of conversation this morning,
If reasoned means paranoid, lol. Okay, thanks for that. Right then, that's what we have thus far on with the news coming back, or the views coming back on Viewpoint. If you've got a viewpoint you want to get across to us, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And let's have a reply then from some of the points that were brought in, Alf, that we saw on that one.
Well, first of all, about sustainable pay rates, there really isn't anything called sustainable when you talk about pay, because it's always rising pay, which rises costs, which rises, you know, whatever it does. It's only when they section some of it off in profits that it becomes even more abused. So sustainable pay rates effectively means you shouldn't be claiming pay rates higher than where you are, in order that creates that spiral of inflation. And like I say, I lived through the 70s and all of that nonsense that went on. We lost the Labour government at the time. I wasn't proud of that. Well, in hindsight, I wasn't proud of it. But at the time, we, you know, as union people, were claiming what we thought was right for us. You can't have inflation running at 12, 14, what about with Tedeef, you know, 12, 14, 16%, and they offer you a pay rise of 3%. It just, that's unsustainable for working people. And as for the, let's have another little pop at Mick Lynch, shall we? Yeah, I'm not a fan of him. And by the way, Corbyn, as far as I know, isn't a Marxist, he's a Leninist, but, you know, we'll spot the difference, right? It's called communist. In one guise or another, he's more left-wing than I am, and he has views that are more left-wing, but that doesn't make him wrong. It just makes him have a different opinion, and Mick Lynch is in that category. And remember, before that, you know, the RMT have never been a union that shied away from taking on the employer. But you tubes run well without drivers. I thought the tubes did have drivers. What?
No, it's ticket offices.
Ticket offices. Yeah. Well, and that's part of the problem, isn't it? This is, if people can go back that far, if you go back to where the miners started, most trade unionists who were in there were supporting the miners for where they were, because their leadership took them into a position that they could never get away from. But when the Tories say we're going to close every mine in the country, you've got two choices. You either fight the closures or you negotiate arrangements. And what Scargill didn't do is he didn't, whilst trying to fight some of the closures, he didn't negotiate and didn't want to negotiate the alternatives, because as trade unionists, you never want to be seen to be negotiating redundancy agreements, because we're not in the game of selling jobs. That's what is always said. So you have this dilemma. So about two-thirds of the way through the strike, the unions, you know, that's where you ended up with the Union of Democratic Mine Workers. That's why you ended up with unions leaving the TUC. A whole raft of things were happening because people weren't happy at the Scargill direction. And again, in hindsight, and it was hindsight, and I know from my experience with British Telecom, you have this choice. And I tell you, the choice that you never win is when you take on a government in an attempt to stop them doing something that you don't want them to do, i.e. we're going to close all the mines, i.e. we're going to privatise British Telecom, i.e. we're going to privatise water, we're going to privatise electric, privatise gas, privatise the canals, shipping, you know, we lose our shipping industry. Oh, by the way, we're in the EU, and we're going to stop all these countries from investing in industry wrongly under the EU umbrella. So France didn't really rip away most of our shipping and build ships in France. They didn't subsidise their shipping industry. Not much, they didn't. You know, we lost most of our satellite industry through Marconi Matra. Yeah, a whole raft of things that happened. So what you've got now, modern day, is you've got Mick Lynch saying, I'm on the left, I don't agree with what you're doing. Oh, and by the way, from where I'm standing, I don't believe that the EU are any good for my type of industry and the people who work in my type of industry, because the European Union are setting parameters that we have to fulfil that are not very good for British workers in this industry. Not British workers in general, British workers in this industry. That's where they came from at the time. And what you find from all of that is that Mick Lynch then becomes, you know, you're the pariah, you're the enemy. But he has no choice. How do they negotiate? Oh, and someone says other rail workers, you know, are going to go on strike, like drivers. You know, yeah, in three companies. I don't know, is it 14 rail operating companies? Four of them have already done deals, especially the ones that are associated with local government, where there are, you know, Manchester, another one in Wales. You know, there's four companies have already done deals with all of this, all of the classed RMT workforce. But of course, because it's one union, they're still going to go on strike in Wales, they're still going to go on strike in Manchester, because they have no option. That's just what's so awkward about it, because they're also striking against Network Rail, you know, a government owned company. It's right. Not some private enterprise. And then they go, oh, we've put all this money, and it's called, the only reason the government put money into Network Rail is because they're protecting their own investment. They weren't worried about the workforce. If they could have got rid of all the workforce, they would have got rid of all the workforce. They'd have still kept the Network Rail going, because they had to come out of the COVID situation. So, you know, it's not true. Three companies, where the companies refuse to talk to the unions, collective unions, by the way, and they don't talk to them individually. The unions in the rail network will have some sort of collective, and they'll all sit round the table together, and they'll all negotiate with a train operating company.
Right.
And there's three of them. Big deal. Tell those train operating companies to behave themselves. Why can't they do the deals that the other four have already done and the others are considering? Oh, no, we're not going to give you a pay rise. Yeah, that's conflict. And the workers have little or no choice. If you're in the, you know, if you're in the corner of a boxing ring and someone's coming at you, all guns are blazing, what do? Stand there and just take it? No, you don't. You defend yourself. That's what they do.
This come in from Ross. He said, if you stretch an elastic band too far, it either breaks or it snaps back. That's where we are now in the UK, with low tax for the rich and low wages for the NHS. Teachers, barristers, train drivers, and anyone else who generates money, the rich hoard. If things don't snap back, they'll break. I've got a strong feeling that the public largely is ready to hear this, and that even large portions of the well-to-do are accepting of the necessity for redistribution. Too much pain and sacrifice has been given, and it's time that Labour grew a pair and made this case. We need a wealth assets tax, a land value tax, a capital gains tax return to 30%, as was during the Thatcher boom, and then they'll spend the money on wages, education, training, infrastructure and housing. We have shockingly poor productivity because we don't invest enough. We just asset strip. We don't train kids or adults well enough. We are short of almost 2 million engineers in a supposedly knowledge, skills and science economy. And this is the tip of the iceberg. Far too much of our wealth gets tied up in housing, largely because of land costs. And those are largely because of the Cadogan, Grosvenor and other aristo families who are sat on the asset and charge whatever they want. Tax them out of it and free up wealth to invest, yeah? And also, far too much of the nation's wealth and power sits in 5 square miles of London. Relocate Parliament to Leeds and shift government departments to regions. There was talk of the House of Lords going to Stoke. Imagine that. Sell the London assets and use the money to invest elsewhere. Invest hugely in childcare. Doing so frees up half the 20 to 40 year old workforce to do more and panic less. It will boost our productivity, also gives their kids better life chances 20 years from now, which is the kind of long term thinking we need more of yet and never do.
So you come from Stoke, Giles?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, near Stoke.
Near Stoke. I was talking about from the posh part of Stoke the other Friday night. Somebody said, oh, you're from...
Wasn't Burslem.
No, it was not Burslem.
Or Stone. Oh, it was Stone, wasn't it? You come from Stone. Yeah. It's BT Training Centre, exactly. Stone. Huge. Anyway.
Method. Anyway, go on.
Method, yeah.
Anyway, move on. Moving swiftly on to the in-jokes.
So yeah, if we if
so,
if
what I was going to say is
too far.
What I was going to say is that is some
there
of these
is a
things.
Posh, sorry, I can just go.
Richard, yes, there is a posh part of Stoke. Be gone.
Right.
You say they have to diversify. I think what is it? It's about 60% of the civil service offices and branches and whatever existed in London have all been moved out to, you know, you've got your tax in Newcastle, you've got driving licenses in Wales and Northern Ireland. They did diversify because that's how you get the jobs out into the regions that were starved of jobs. Government funded jobs is what keeps the country going, whether people like it or not. But in Stoke, in the Second World War, they used Parliament. There's an alternative parliament, exactly the same as Westminster.
Right.
So moving the House... The difficulty is that the House of Lords isn't a standalone in the Palace of Westminster. It's all part of the same... You will double the costs. If you take the Lords out from the Commons, you will double the costs of running Parliament. They are integral to each other. Everything they do is together. You know, you don't go and say, oh, well, I'll just pop down the road and talk to a minister.
Yeah.
They walk down a corridor
yeah.
and knock on an office and say, I demand a meeting yeah. now.
Surely in an age of Zoom meetings, then if there were pandemic thoughts, one thing it's going to have to
no,
be...
No. Giles, you know better than that. Zoom meetings, telephone meetings, all that. It's all... eyewash. There's nothing bad. If it wasn't, why have the G7 just sat round the table?
Because they can stand there with their, they can take their shirts off
and show their pecs.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see Boris's pecs.
Let's not even go there.
But you know, the reality is that you cannot separate these things out. And there's this wild assumption. Yes, Parliament, I think they employ something like 3,500 people in total for the lot. But that's all their accommodation. That's everything. Across the road from Westminster is the building where all the MPs have got their offices. Mm. You can't just, oh, we'll just up that and move it to a different part. You can over years.
Yeah. 9527 84,000, morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller, you're live on TRE. Oh, no, and here we go. As my Welsh grammar used to say, there he was, gone. MPs in Stoke, no chance. There's a posh part of Stoke? Yeah, the exit. Thank you so much for that.
Stoke used to be very low, but it's not now.
Well, let's see. Anyway, just Alfred, John's come back. Alfred's just confirming without realising it that they are working to bring down individuals and bring about the Great Reset. You are all focused on the micro situation, and that's what they want. You're being diverted into micro rather than attacking your real enemies, the globalists. Thanks, John. Good to have you with us. 952-784-1000 is the phone number. Just time for this.
Thank you for listening to Talk Radio Europe.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
This show, always live, always lively, joined by Alf Brewer and Ros and Scott Gibb. Just before we come on to our next subject, this one in from Cormac. It says, the writing was on the wall when they started criminalising protests. The writing was on the wall when they took control of the Electoral Commission and when they introduced mandatory voter ID to exclude working class and minority voters. The writing was on the wall when they granted themselves new powers to overrule the verdict of judicial reviews. The writing was on the wall when they criminalised the right to seek asylum in our country. The writing was on the wall when they let in 180,000 of our most vulnerable citizens die because a few party donors wanted to keep maximising their own profits. It was also when they siphoned off billions of pounds of public money to their friends and relatives through their illegal priority lane PPE contracts and the failed track and trace system, which we seem to have forgotten about, that one. Track and trace.
It's gone.
It's gone, but, you know, billions.
It's because they tracked, but yeah. They never traced.
The writing is on the writing is on the wall for them as every corner as they attempt to deport refugees to a country with an even more questionable stance on human rights than their own, and the Department of Propaganda demonise workers fighting for their rights. The writing is on the wall around every corner and is there for all to see. And yet, says Richard, those who read the writings on the wall still vote Conservative, hashtag dumb Britain. Okay, if reasons means paranoid. He's just repeating himself. He doesn't remember his rant of less than half an hour ago. Just because you repeat a lie doesn't make it any truer. Thanks for that. Right, 952-784-1000. Rosalind, this week, a
last week, excuse me, a landmark ruling in the Supreme Court of the States. Roe versus Wade overturned, shock through the system. I have seen people saying life wins. This is a vote for the unborn child. This is going to make women take responsibilities of their bodies. Women are using abortion almost as a contraception in the States. What has been your response to that? And where does it put us? Where do you think it puts the States as well in terms of where do you think it puts the States? This is yet again another issue that is going to polarize the U.S. even further.
Well, the whole thing is disgraceful to have this vote that Mitch McConnell has been planning and working on for the last 8 years. But they and so it's really Mitch McConnell and of course Trump, who it's the extreme right evangelists are so hypocritical. They completely ignore Trump's life, the fact that he lies, his whole lifestyle, but because he promised to bring back to take away abortion and to revoke the laws, they followed him, and that's how he got in. But and Mitch McConnell made through. You see, Mitch McConnell denied.
For those who don't know who Mitch McConnell is, sorry, Ross.
He was the main. I think he's the main speaker, whatever you call him, from the Senate. And he didn't allow. Obama should have brought in one of the top lawyers for the Supreme Council. So we find ourselves in this situation of 6 out of 9 voting extreme right. And it's totally wrong. It's totally against the public and what the public want. In addition to women, most men just... And it's also totally against humanity and the rights of humanity. It's and it's going to go further and further. But people forget that this affects not necessarily so much your average woman, but the woman who's already struggling on low income, trying to get an education, trying to get a job, trying to feed a family, and medical care, decent medical. None of this is covered. So they take away the right of abortion, control of your own body as a woman, which is disgraceful. It's no easy decision for any woman ever to make a decision like this. It's a profoundly difficult decision that any woman has to make, but she has to make it alone. It's her decision. And to take that away from women is absolutely disgraceful, and there's no excuse for it. And the repercussions are horrendous because already, okay, so 10 states have already decided. They were all prepared and ready.
The trigger bands they had. They were
yeah, exactly.
Bands, weren't they?
Yeah. And then there's another 17. So we're up to 25 states who are already working in this situation. And it's being pushed by the evangelist right-wing Christians, which is totally hypocritical and misguided. Totally misguided.
But they would argue that you know life begins at conception, and the Bible literally says that, and so well, they are purely saying what it says in the Bible.
No, this is semantics, and it's also a priorities, and it's political. The real problem is the whole issue is totally political, and that's all wrong. Now it goes even further. So not only does it affect healthcare, education. We've worked so hard to be able to get a decent education and therefore to be able to get a professional job, to work, to be make our own decisions and look after our family. And that's all going to be taken away. But it also is going to have an effect internationally because there's all these countries in South America that are going to revert back. There's only 6 countries at the moment in South America that still don't allow abortion.
Right, okay.
All the other countries in South America have accepted abortion as a necessary part of life. Nobody says it's good or, you know, it's just
Yeah.
Part of life.
9527 84000. Thank you, Stephen. Mitch McConnell is the Senate Minority Leader, Republican. Thank you.
Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE.
Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanca.
Yes, Kate.
One, St. Thomas, you might be interested. that the person who most definitively identified when life began, St. Thomas Aquinas, well, universally well regarded in the medieval period, he said it does not start at conception. It starts when the life exists independently, i.e. out of the womb. And I think he gave a sort of, and, you know, up to 8 days, it's dicey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of the heat is because the pro-life regarding abortion as murder, one of the great church fathers quite categorically said not until 8 days out, you know?
Thank you very much for the call in there. 952.
And can I just quickly add a couple of points quickly? I grew up while there was no right to an abortion in the UK. You usually, if you got into trouble, you went to usually a religious place to have the baby, and some people had abortions.
Yeah.
No one knows what proportion of people, but it was certainly always a very dangerous position, particularly for the mother.
Right. Thanks very much for the call in. As always, Kate. Good to hear from you. 952 78 4000. Ross.
Well, I mean, the point is that whatever they do with the law, abortion is not going to stop. It's just going to revert back to being very, very dangerous for the mother.
And this is, one of the things that was being brought up. If you look at I saw a map of the states that are now against abortion is illegal. I mean, in some states, completely illegal, no matter what case.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, as you'd expect, the South Texas, those central areas. And it's the West Coast and the East Coast, down to a certain line on the East Coast, that are allowing abortions. And once again, you're going to get this thing where it's, you know, if you can afford, you'll be able to travel across borders. So it would be, you know, rich parents, if their girl gets into, you know, suddenly finds herself pregnant, will be able to fly her or transport her to a place. And this is the thing. There are companies that have said that they will allow their employees to get access to care that they might not be able to get in their own states. So you've got companies such as PayPal, Nike, Microsoft, Match Group, Bank of America even are saying, yeah, we will allow you to travel across. But looking at some of the comments in, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez demanded the impeachment of the Supreme Court Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch because they lied to the senators about their views on Roe and Wade when they were elected, and they said there must be consequences because it sets a dangerous precedent.
The three of them, they'd all lied. Now, they say they didn't, and it could be possibly semantics. It didn't even seem like semantics to me. It seemed, I saw the when they were asked directly how they would vote, and they all denied that they would change the law. They all three of them denied it, so they all lied. And but I'm also just devastated at the extreme evangelist right, who first of all, it's a very complex subject about the beginning of life, and they don't even agree on it at all. They don't even discuss it any longer. There was an interview I saw last night of one of the serious members of pro-life group for 30 years, and he left because he realized in his own words, that his attitude was wrong, he'd made a mistake. And he said they never discussed this any longer. It's totally, totally political. But even, what about the point of incest and rape and harm to the mother? There is that case in Ireland, why the law changed in 2012, because the mother died of septicemia. Because it was against the law. So it's just so wrong. But they're not. Women are absolutely not going to accept this.
Mm.
That's part of the problem. Sorry, Charles. Yeah, part of the problem again, Ross. We come back to the very first point. This was a political decision to put these people into the justice system.
Yeah.
In order to change the law to a certain viewpoint. I won't say left or right wing. They're just people who have a certain bent to that. Mm-hmm. They knew about these people, but Trump still appointed them. You know, it was known about these people. Whether they said and they lied in their interview is irrelevant, because irrespective of what they said in their interview, Trump still appointed them, because they're appointees. So,
but that's why Trump appointed them, because he promised to reverse the law.
But the secondary point is, this is about politics. You said it yourself, Ross. This is a political decision based on politics. How do you change the politics? I'll tell you, you don't change it. You don't give it to all the states, and all the states individually then say, we're going to ban abortion. And there's no right of the people in those states to have an election or a vote or a referendum, state by state. None of that. Nothing across the United States. We know this is going to divide. It's divided the world for years, in all manner of religious backgrounds. So I come back to the same point. As harsh and as horrible as it is, if you want to change the world, change the politics. There's talk today, I've just read it, I was saying years ago, when Blair became Prime Minister, the big move in the Labour Party was to change the electoral system away from first past the post into proportional representation. And the anti-proportional representation argument was quite simple. You will never get a single government. It will always be a compromise government, a coalition. Mm-hmm. Always. Spain's proof of it, Belgium's proof of it, wherever you go. Now, everybody's talking about the only way to stop the Tories is to have proportional representation, which means that the Lib Dems, Labour, maybe the SNP have got to get together an oppositional position to beat the Tories at the election, to get into power, right? You get into power in Parliament, and then you change the law away from first past the post to proportional representation. Then there'll be 20,000 different arguments about what style of proportional representation. Instead of just getting on with it and saying we're changing, first past the post is the most distorted electoral system in the world, because you can win a vote on next to nothing. By elections, 38% turnout. It changes from a Tory to a Labour. I mean, I may say that's good, but it ain't changed the style of the Tories. It hasn't changed anything in Wakefield. It hasn't done anything for any of that. It's just delayed the decision until the general election, when it'll all go back. How can less than 2/5 of a population decide who's going to be your representative? And this is why I bang on about, make sure you vote, make sure you register to vote. People who are in Spain now, who have been here, this is another little trick they're doing with this election bill. If you've been, because they've said they're going to extend the 15-year rule, get rid of it. Votes for life, yeah? Except you've got to have voted in the UK in the last 15 years to automatically get the right to carry on voting.
Right.
So anybody who's been here for longer than 15 years have to go through a whole process.
Just in from Kay, Republicans were very loud with my body, my choice when it came to getting vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be not allowing that, nutting out that elsewhere. 952-784-4000. This coming in, these coming in. Morning, Giles. In fact, I'll take a quick break and then we'll come back to the ones coming in on this one.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Right, we're back in for the last 15 minutes.
Blast, blast.
Buckle, yeah, blast, indeed, Roslyn. Buckle up, it may be a bumpy ride. So let's have a look at some of the internet, the stuff coming in on the WhatsApp. Still time to get in. In fact, Lucy, do your stuff.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Meanwhile, moving swiftly onwards, right then, hopefully the microphone wasn't up for that one. good morning, Giles. The evangelist Taliban in the US are not only hypothetically supporting Trump, but as pro-lifers support the death sentence and guns for everyone. Meanwhile, great stuff, Alf and Rosalind. You're making a lively program. Cheers, Ian and Chili Camberley. Americans want to preserve the lives of unborn children, but are more than happy to support their kids being wiped out at school. Happy balance. The problem is that, okay, so when one of the worst offenders is Clarence Thomas, a man who never pipes, ever pipes up, and then pipes up after the abortion goes through and wants to double down on removing other rights, like same-sex marriage. Are these the same people who want right to arms? That's the problem with religionists. The rich states on the coast, by the way, can allow it. The idiotic, poorer yeehaws in the centre don't. The problem is that US politics is binary. It's either Republicans or Democrats. The states have their chance to elect pro-death leadership, if they wish, at the midterms. Let's see who wins. And this in from Helena. Helena, please can I ask that Alf gets off his Labour platform and gives someone else a chance to speak? He even managed to get back to the Labour Party and the Tory Party when the other guest was talking about the abortion law change in the USA. Well, that's one of Alf's.
It's where I come from.
It's where you come from. So there you go. But thank you. Thank you, Helena, for your observations there. So that's more stuff coming in with that one. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. If you want to, and the phones have gone off, we've got 12 minutes left of this morning's viewpoint. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Ben O'Madden, it's John Dodd.
Hi, John.
How are you?
You
don't sound very happy to hear from me.
No, I'm just doing something else at the same time. What is your viewpoint, please?
Well, the viewpoint is, I still hear people uttering about pandemics and everything else. So I'm willing to put €1,000 on the table to anybody that can send me photographs of any pandemic anywhere in the world. How about that?
John. What sort of pandemic would you like? The lesser spotted pandemic? Perhaps the greater crested?
No.
Bye, John. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. I do so look forward to those calls from John. 952-78-4000 is the phone number for that one. We're talking about abortions. Yeah, I'm sure you'll take his €1,000 immediately. I'm not. That would be like, I don't know, clubbing a one-finned baby seal or something. No sport in that whatsoever. So let's have your same comments, please, to 952-78-4000. The phone number, studio@tre.radio, is the email. Just coming up tomorrow. On Let's Talk, you'll hear interesting facts that end up as great stories.
We had a right old bundle. He was bigger than me, quite muscular. And then probably one of the scariest moments of my entire career as I looked across in the dawn and saw two more people sprinting towards me.
Join me, Giles Brown, for Let's Talk.
And the positive, the kind of comments I'm getting, tells me that people have been waiting a long time to have this conversation.
Weekdays at 10 o'clock, except Tuesdays. What level of banter did you get from your colleagues about the squirrel monkey incident, then?
Absolutely merciless. Yes.
Yes, Let's Talk with me tomorrow, of course. Now, one of the things we were talking about the ruling, the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Some people are saying, some people have been saying, if you really were pro-life, you would support. Well, let's go to the phones. 952-78-4000. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Just going back to that other subject, is it a yay or a nay? Do you accept the bet?
We're not taking. Anybody? We're not a betting channel. We're not taking a betting channel, John. And I'm not talking about pandemics. And have a nice day. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. Rosalind.
Well, just another point, a further point about the Supreme Court in the United States, how really unhealthy it is. Because it's just the beginning of what they're going to vote on. I mean, I don't follow sports and football, but the latest after their decision against abortion was that not praying on the 50th line. Have you seen that?
No, but one of the things is to say...
And I don't know anything about that, but I do know that I don't think the Supreme Court should be making decisions of where anybody prays or where they don't pray. But I can see people being very concerned about same-sex marriage. All the moves forward are going to be reversed, which is such an unhealthy situation for all the people involved.
I mean, the thing is, once you have turned over a piece of legislation that is so emotive, and you treat a health issue like a crime issue, then surely this is making things very difficult indeed. And the other point is the fact that you could say if you're saying that it's the Bible and it's saying that, then how far away from other things it says in the Bible? You can say, you know, same-sex marriage, you can say, you know, homosexuality, you could say the eating of shrimp, for example, that sort of thing, because that's in the Bible. I mean, so how far are we, but not so seriously, if we go down this path, exactly. are we going to be making other things illegal?
I mean, this is a step back in... human rights. We're supposed to be increasing human rights, not decreasing human rights. I mean, we are talking about women's health and women's life and a woman's future and the limitations of a woman. But that's just the beginning of where we're going to go. And the U.S. does affect the rest of the world. What happens there does affect change attitudes in the rest of the world. So it's very, very dangerous.
952-78-4000, going live to the lines again. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. We seem to have lost that one. 952-78-4000. Into the last 7 minutes or so of this morning. Thank you, Richard. I'll take his bet and raise him 10K. HIV/AIDS must be a myth then. would only be happy to be out. Well, anyway, my thoughts on this or any other matter as well. Looking at some of the bits and pieces coming in on this one. Just checking the feed. This caller is... John, if it's John Dodd again, I'm not going to take the call, so just so you know. Morning call, you're live on TRE.
Yes, hello. Terry from Calbrae. Sorry to have a little rant at you. But you have interesting guests on, and most of the people in the programme know the email address, know the phone number, and it's continuously been interrupted, the flow, with always telling us what we already know. And I'd just like more time with our guests. That's my personal view.
Thank you for your call in there. 952-78-4000, email studio@tre.radio. You can WhatsApp me on +34 645 996795. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. You can contact me on Twitter and also the Instagram as well. A million and one ways to get in contact with us on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 996795. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Indeed. Right then, Alf, over to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to... Sharon may remember a while ago, she asked me about stuff for what was happening with the election bill, and specifically about the imposition of photo ID. Someone rang in early and sort of said it. But this is just an example. This is not dissimilar to what, you know, the justice system in the States are doing. these organisations set themselves up as all-powerful individual bodies and then tell a pack of lies in order to justify what they're doing. So in the UK, it happens to be the Electoral Commission. The Electoral Commission has always been an independent body made up of a range of people. No political parties are involved in it. No government people are involved in it. It's all civil service and industry, etc. But they've said, this is according to, I have to guess, Lord True. I'm not sure if anybody believes that a Tory is true, but Lord True was doing it, and he said that the photo identification approach was the best for electoral systems. And you know, there's a whole raft of things that say that that's not true, and everybody at election time gets a piece of paper anyway to say they can vote. And if you turn up at the polling station without your polling card, then you have to produce some sort of evidence to say where you live and you're still alive, etc., etc., etc. But they use such things as turnout was higher in Northern Ireland than in Great Britain when they first used photo ID. I don't know anybody who turned up at a polling station just because they'd been given a photograph of themselves and they wanted to show it to someone sitting in a polling station to take their votes. You know, they talk absolute arrant nonsense. And also, when they had the first votes, and this is all in the bill that I've been sent by my friend in the House of Lords, who debated all of this.
Yeah.
When they did the 2003 Northern Ireland Assembly, they reckon that about 25,000 people were excluded from the vote because of no ID, and they had to have photo ID. 2-odd percent of the electorate were turned away at the polling station because they had no ID. And David Blunkett was saying at the time, if the Commons don't change this stance on photo ID, it will come back to hurt them. Most of this is about electoral fraud. Okay, so this just they did a survey. The Electoral Commission did a survey, and they found that most of the time it wasn't because people were showing wrong papers or wrong this or wrong that. 1,341 people were crossed off, but you know, with the wrong name. The person in the ballot station on the list crossed the wrong name off. So someone, you know, they said they voted, but someone who did vote isn't crossed off. 1,341 out of 32 million ballot papers. How can anybody? This is like Trump saying, you know, all these votes turned up. You know, and I kept saying at the time, it's not true. There is a system. It's a fail-safe system. And what they want to do as well, in order to incorporate all this into new law, the Tories are going to invest, it's not an investment, they're going to spend £180 million over the next 10 years ensuring that photo ID stuff works. And it's not nonsense. And the classic is the Tory that was really the major player in this, a guy called Lord Cormac, having had all of this debate, and I'm talking hours. There's 100, I haven't sent it out because, Sharon, it's 177 pages of a bill. And all of this is lost in about 8 or 9 pages. But it says, this is Lord Cormac. All I will say is that I think we need identity cards in this country, full stop. He's not talking about identity cards for going to vote. He's talking about identity cards in order to prove who you are. And I know, you know, the challenge from John, yes, I've got a driving licence, yes, I've got a passport, but I don't have to show them to anybody unless I'm going to the bank and they say, oh, we want this or we want that. And Spain have national identity cards. I think they now are starting putting photographs on them. But there is a choice. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's this whole method that the establishment uses. I'm not sure it's John's they, because they, the establishment, is quite clear. It's the people in control. It's the power people. It's mm-hmm. the governments. They have decided you will have. Now, they're hoping that this bill is going to be talked and talked and talked. It may not even apply for the next general election, which is a long way. Well, for most of us, too far off.
Right.
But a long way off. But this also involves people like us in Spain, because at the moment, all I do is sign a piece of paper, send it to the electoral registration officer, and they use that for my postal vote. I have never shown a photo. I have never had to prove that I'm alive. I just sign a bit of paper. I don't have to get somebody else to sign it to say it's me. I have to do that for some of my pensions. I have to get someone, a local shop owner or something, to sign to say, yes, he is Alf Bruin. Yes, he is still alive. Just. No, it's just the whole thing is how they do it. And that's no different to the justice system in America. They've got the power.
Yeah.
Which is what I always come back to. They've got the power. Are they using it wisely or are they abusing their position? And in my view, I think they are abusing their power.
952-78-4000. Right, almost out of time. Thank you for the listeners. Sent me a picture of, it looks remarkably like me wearing a tinfoil hat, saying, it'll soon be noon. Breathe and relax. It's been another live and lively, once again, viewpoint. My thanks to my guests, Ross and Scott Gibb.
Thank you, Giles. Thank you, everybody, all our listeners.
And also to Alf as well. Alf as well.
Thank you to Giles. Thank you, Ross.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Thanks.
This show will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next. And remember, take gambling or betting responsibly.
Do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.